Welcome to Report Out's Hidden Voices podcasts from around the globe. Report Out is a human rights research organisation and charity based in the UK. Report Out monitors, researches and documents the lived experiences of sexual and gender minority people and their communities in different nation states. We use this information to educate others on the lived experiences of sexual and gender minorities and to campaign and push for social change across the globe. You may notice that we use the term SOGSC, which means sexual orientation, gender identity, gender expression, and sex characteristics. Why do this? Because it's a culturally sensitive umbrella term to cover all sexual and gender minorities. These interviews will consist of SOGSC individuals who live in different nation states, and whilst we'll be discussing the barriers that they face, we will also highlight how they find resistance to them. Welcome to our Hidden Voices podcasts.
Today we are welcoming BA. Hello BA, how are you?
Hi, I'm good, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. If you can tell us a little bit about yourself, I know obviously you're living in the UK now, but just a bit of background history of when you were in Saudi Arabia and things like that.
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Saudi Arabia. I was born in a very conservative household sort of speech. I just realized that I'm homosexual when I was like 7 or 8. And obviously I kept it to myself. I lived there, I went to school and everything, university. Obviously, none of my family know anything about my sexual orientations. And then I decided that I have had enough. I want to move to a place that I can be myself. So I decided to move to the UK. I moved to the UK 2017, to be precise, in August. Started my degree in teaching and completed it the next year. Got a job here as a science teacher, married to my partner now, we're living together, and life has been pretty much excellent in the past 3 years.
Did you say that you haven't told your family or any friends there?
No. No,
they
nobody
still don't
knows
know now.
There. No, I mean, I know it's disheartening when you have your wedding day and you cannot invite any of your family members, but I would rather it would came as a shocking and bad news rather than a happy news. So I just kept it to myself. So I didn't have anybody from my side of family in the wedding. So is my gay friends. I kept it away from them. I kept it as a secret because most of them are okay with their sexuality, but they don't have the concept that you can actually get married to a man and live with them. You can have a boyfriend and live with them, but not as a legal commitment, sort of speech. So, yeah, even my gay friends, they think I'm in a relationship, but not in a civil partnership, not in a legal status of relationship.
Oh, wow. So do you still go to Saudi Arabia on your own to see your family, but obviously keep that hidden?
I went last year when I got my spouse visa that allowed me to travel easily. So I did go to Saudi, but I had to plan my way there. Because if they checked my visa in Saudi and it said spouse, they would ask for the government papers that says you are approved to marry non-Saudi woman. So even if you are straight, you need to have the government approval to marry a non-Saudi woman, which obviously I don't have. So to avoid that happening to me in the airport and getting my cover blown away, I flew through Emirates. So I flew from Newcastle to Dubai, and from Dubai to Saudi, I booked two separate flights, not connected. So I had to stay in the airport for like 10 hours for the next flight to Saudi.
Oh, wow.
So when I went to Saudi, I came in as traveling from within the Gulf, not from Europe, because I've already crossed the borders from England to the UAE. So now I am in the Arabic Peninsula, so it's okay. I can travel with my national ID, not even a passport. And then on the way out, I did the same. So I booked two separate flights, one to Dubai, where I crossed the borders as a Saudi who's visiting Dubai, and then from Dubai to Newcastle. And then when they asked for my visa, I gave them my spouse visa, and they said, oh, so you've got a spouse visa. I said, yeah, my wife is in Newcastle. And they said, oh, okay, no problem. But because I'm not from Dubai, so they're not bothered. I'm from Saudi, so it's none of their business. So going back to visit home again, it's a mission. But I've done it because I've been here for like 2.5 years and I haven't been back home. So I think I'm going to do it once every 2 or 3 years, because staying in an airport for 10 hours and being worried that you've been discovered on a spouse visa is a very stressful situation, to be honest.
That is insane. I would understand why you go through the effort, see your family, because I would want to do the same. But it's just insane, the things that you've got to do to get over there.
I know. Again, it's either this or losing your life. So when you weigh the risks, it's actually worth doing that way.
Of course. Yeah. Do you think they... not necessarily suspect anything, but do they ask you questions about marriage when you go over?
They did use to ask me these kind of questions when I was living there. But the thing is, because I went to med school in Saudi, and it is 7 years of studies, so it was quite busy. So they left me alone because they couldn't see me at all, because I was bouncing between hospitals and clinics and the university and the research and things like that. So they couldn't see much of me, and they thought, oh, well, he's so busy. But then when I graduated in 2010, the pestering started. Okay, so you've graduated now. Should we look for a girl for you? Do you have anybody in your mind that you get to know and marry her? And I used to deflect, saying, oh, not yet. I need to do my master's. I need to do my internship. I need to do this. I need to do that. I'm not going to get married just for the sake of it, because I just finished uni, and leave my wife in the house by herself. I need to establish myself and my career. They believed that, and I was constantly keeping busy, and sometimes even if I'm not busy, I would just not go home until late, just to show that I am really don't have free time on my hands. So the other factor that helped me get away from that pressure is I have 2 sisters and 4 brothers. So the concentration kind of been diluted and spread all over the rest of my siblings. And at some point, my mom and dad, they just lost hope, because they said, oh, well, you're always busy, you're always studying, you're always switching careers, and you're never going to settle down. When are you going to settle down? Until I decided to come to the UK, and I didn't tell them anything about that until it was the last minute. So I came to the UK for my interviews and my QTS tests and everything, and I didn't tell them that I'm coming here for that. I said, oh, I'm just going for a holiday for a couple of weeks. And when I got accepted at everything, I started sorting out everything to move, and like the visa and the tickets and the accommodation and everything. And then 1 week before I leave, I said, well, I have some big news. I've been accepted into master's program in the UK, and I'm leaving the end of this week. I didn't tell you before because I wasn't sure if I'm going to get on the course or not, but now I'm on the course, so I have to tell you. They were happy but shocked at the same time, and the first question was, when are you coming back? I said, well, I don't know, but the master's is 1 year, so nothing before 1 year. And then when I finished my degree here, they came over for my graduation, which was really lovely to have them over. And then the question was, okay, are you coming back now since you've graduated and everything? And I had to deflect again and said, no, I can't, because once you finish, you need to finish your NQT to get the full qualifying status of being a teacher. So that needs a year. And then they were, oh, okay, so after that you will come back. I said, yeah, if there is a chance, I will come back. And then I just took it day by day. Whenever they call, I come up with something. Oh, they extended my NQT, or I've got promoted, or I've got transferred to another place, or I'm getting this, I'm getting that. And the last thing, actually, it's so funny, because last night my father called me and he was like, how are you? How is everything with lockdown and COVID and everything? And I was like, oh, it's all right, it's fine. And he said, so you're not sick of being abroad now? Are you not going to come back and find yourself a wife? And I said to him, Dad, I don't mean to be rude, but if you are calling me to intervene in my private life, I don't want you to call me. But if you are calling to check on me and say hi, that's absolutely fine, and we can have a good laugh and a catch up. But I'm not willing to dwell into the same conversation again and again. When I'm ready, I'll let you know. So please don't ask me that again. And he said, oh, I don't mean that, I'm really sorry, but because I'm not there, so they are afraid of upsetting me, so I would disconnect with them.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of like, being here, I'm standing on the higher ground, really. So every now and then when they call or ask about when I'm coming back, or I am coming back, I would say, I'm not having this conversation. If you're calling to catch up, fair enough, but pressuring me and asking me to come back and get married, I don't want to have this conversation. Focus on the other five things that they haven't got married yet. They are under your roof. You control them. I'm independent. I'm not asking you for anything, so just leave me alone. And they sort of kind of like lost hope in getting that. And part of me thinks that they think that I have got married here to a woman, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't know. So that's it. And actually,
I know Saudi Arabia is a very religious and cultural country in the way that how they do things when it comes to marriage and things like that. And do you think they think you were going to marry a English woman, for example, do you think mm-hmm. they would frown upon that? Never mind going and telling them, you know, who you truly are.
I really don't know, because it's kind of complicated situation in my family. I mean, if it was a regular setup of family, I would say, oh, they would be saying, oh, no, you can't. You have to marry a girl from your own tribe and etc. But the thing is, my mom is actually not 100% Saudi. She's half Palestinian. And my dad comes from a big tribe. So him marrying her was kind of a rebellious action. Okay. So we've got this open-mindedness in our family in terms of that. And my cousin from my mother's side, who's Palestinian, he actually lives in London and married to a British woman. So I think it would be easier for them to take that news if I said so. They would accept it somehow easier than if I were born in a complete 100% Saudi family, mom and dad, I mean, and both of them are from big tribes. So yeah. We've got our sort of mixed culture in our family, in my household. So they would be okay, not 100% happy, but then they would dig and ask a lot of questions. Who is she? How did you meet her? Where is she? Do you have children? Why don't you bring her and visit? We want to come and visit and see her. Obviously, all that is going to come after they accept the news. They might be upset if I didn't invite them to the wedding, but they will eventually be fine with it. Because my cousin, who moved to London and got married and kept his marriage secret until he had a child, and then when he went back to Jordan, because the family lives in Jordan, they've been pushed out of Palestine back in the, you know, between when the war was there. So they sought asylum in Jordan and left Palestine. So when he went back to Jordan, he told his mother that she said to him, "You need to stay now. We're going to find you a wife. That's it. You are 32, whatever." And he said, "Mom, I can't get married because I'm already married." And then the first thing she said, "Oh, you're not getting away with this. You will divorce that woman and get married here, or marry this woman as well, because you are allowed four." And he said, "No, I've got a family. I've got a kid. I'm not ruining my family." And then it sank in and was like, "Oh, shit. He has established his life. So I can't actually force him to divorce his wife or abandon her." And then it just sank in. And then he went back and they didn't talk for like a year or two. And then everything went back to normal slowly with time. And she said to him, "Well, I know now I'm a grandmother, but I've been grandmother before your son. I'm happy to die without seeing your son. I don't acknowledge him, and I don't acknowledge your wife."
Oh my God.
Yeah. So,
do you think part of your fear from coming out to your family then is around religious views and sort of thing? Is that what the main thing is with your family?
I think even if they wanted to accept me, they can't allow themselves to accept me because they are strong believers. So, and in Islam, it's like if you had to choose between your religion or between your offspring or your family or your parents, you have to put your religion first. So I think, actually, I do believe that first they will be shocked, angry, disappointed. They will not talk to me, and they will just exile me, and they will not tell anybody about me, and they will just stop talking to me. And if I was there in Saudi, I'm afraid it might escalate to like sending me to what they call it, like treatments. Like exorcism, psychiatric exorcism, whatever. And God knows, maybe hand me into the government and get executed or something. If they know that I'm gay and married and everything, they would just go ballistic. They wouldn't take that in any good way. Because it is a big shame. It's against the culture and the religion and the law.
Yeah.
So it's against everything that they believe and live in. So they wouldn't take it at all. That's why I don't think I will ever come out to them.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. I mean, I have read some things on Saudi Arabia when it's come to homosexuality, but someone that's obviously lived there, have you have seen anyone experience anything bad that's happened to them due to homosexuality? Or
I did experience that. Luckily nothing happened to me because I was very cautious, but one of my gay friends, they've been catfished on Grindr by the Islamic police. so they the government sent these people who set up profiles on dating app, and then he was talking to this guy, exchanged pictures, went for a coffee, everything is okay. The next date, he asked him to come to his hotel room, and then when he went there, religious police ambushed them and caught my friend. Now, luckily, he wasn't Saudi. He was from Syria. So they deported him, put him in the blacklist of coming into to Saudi. Now, if he was Saudi, he would have been taken to prison. His family would have been informed. He would have lost his job, and he would have lived in shame. Might be executed if he was caught in sexual activity, but since he wasn't Saudi and he wasn't caught in sexual activity, like he wasn't having intercourse, he was just with a guy in the room in a settings or leading to sex through a dating app, they put him in a they held him in a cell, contacted his employer, terminated his contract. And then from there, took him to the airport, sent him back to Syria. And he was blacklisted from coming back to Saudi. And then I think within a year or so, the war started in Syria. And we've just lost contact. We don't know what happened to him. Because obviously the governments share intelligence. And we don't know if he's been back to his family there or being held captive in Syria or being executed. God knows. Nobody knows what happened to him. So, and we don't know if he's still in prison, if he's dead, if he's been killed in the war. We don't know.
I did read something about them pretending to go on the dating websites to catch people out, but I didn't know if it was true or not. So obviously you just told me that. That's absolutely shocking.
No, it is true.
That's really shocked me. It's horrible.
I got some contacts when I was there on the dating apps, which was red flags for me. Like this guy, was his profile had no picture or whatsoever, and he couldn't type in English at all. He was only speaking in Arabic. And that's how you can filter people. Like they need to send you a face picture. They need to speak to you in English. That's the filters that I did. And if they send me nude pictures, I completely block them. And I always meet them in a coffee shop or a public place. I don't get intimate with them immediately. It has to be like after months of normal dating, like meeting outside, going for coffee, for a meal, that's it. And that put off the police because they want victims immediately. They won't catch people. I remember this guy, his profile was blank, nothing on it, was messaging me completely in Arabic, so I ignored him. And then I was in a cafe with my friends. We were like six or seven people. And then he was messaging all of us at some point. And I was like, I'm ignoring this guy. I don't like this. And they were like, yeah, but he seems desperate. And I was like, oh, I don't care. Some of my friends ignored them. One of them accepted to chat with him. I said, oh, I'll just chat and see what's the crack. And I started talking to him. And then the guy was adamant that he... that my friend goes to see him in his hotel room. And we said to him, you're not going to a hotel room to a blank profile with no pictures. The guy refused to send any pictures. He was adamant. He said, oh no, I like old people and I don't have a type. Just please come. I'm really lonely. I need some company. Please come. And he was so persistent. It was weird. And we said to him, no, you can't go. We don't know what would happen if he went. But it did sound fishy and not genuine person. And you get these kind of weird, strange profile people who are desperate to get you visit them in their private place. And what we heard from other people in Saudi that sometimes the police will catch you on the app in a public place, but then they will say, well, we know that app is for gay people. Now, we have an offer for you. You need to seduce 3 or 4. They give you a number of people, and when we catch them, we let you off the hook, kind of like a blackmailing. So yeah, you would find some people who are actually genuinely gay, and they are on there on the apps, and then they get caught, and then they will try to date you just to get themselves off the hook. And it's really frustrating because I don't know for sure, but I heard my friends talking about someone that I recognize, and they said, if you know such and such, please do not respond. Please block him, because now he's under surveillance and he needs to work out his duty. So he needs to hand over X numbers of gays so the government will let him go.
Oh my
so
God.
They do these kind of stuff, which is actually disgusting, to be honest.
The lengths they go to just for something that is just, obviously it's not a crime considered to me or in England, but it's just mm-hmm. crazy to think that the lengths they go to sort yeah. of diminish these people.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go into this forever if I don't stop. it's insane. What did you mention something about like underground? Is it like some underground support that people can go to? Any you know, some have like underground clubs that they can go to for support. Is there anything like that in Saudi Arabia? Any hidden support groups or anything like that?
Yes. Oh, definitely, absolutely. I mean, I don't want to sound rude or ungrateful, but the parties that I had in Saudi are 10 times better than the one in Newcastle, believe it or not.
have to up our stakes then.
I know. Once you know the right people, you will get access to these things. Now, the way the community works in Saudi, I don't know if it's because it is hidden and the thrill and the secrecy makes it more intense, or because it's actually really good scene in the underground. I really don't know. But the thing is, you meet people through the apps, you date them, either it works out or it goes towards the friendship, and then X knows Y, Y knows Z, Z knows W, and then you just start making your connections, and then you start adhering yourself to a group. So it's funny because it sounds like the houses of the gay people, like in America and everywhere else in Europe. So you get like my group, we are like 10 people. We're always together. We always go out together in the weekend. We go to coffee shops, restaurants, whatever. So when we get invited to a party, if any one of us get invited, we all go together as a house, as a family.
Yeah.
So that's us together going. And then sometimes we do host a party, and then we invite 3 or 4 groups. Each group contains 10 or 12 people. And that's how it works. Obviously, the venue is the biggest issue because we don't have bars or clubs or anything. So we do have rental chalets or rental farmhouses. So we do rent these places for a weekend. Obviously, because we are a group, we are 10 people, so we are sharing the cost. So we would share the cost of that house. We would rent it. We would bring like food and drinks, non-alcoholic drinks. And then it comes the alcohol. Alcohol is very expensive in Saudi Arabia because you get it from the black market. It's the same way that you get cocaine in the UK. It's exactly the same. So you need to know a dealer who will not answer you in the weekend because it wouldn't sell. You have to arrange during the week, and it has to be in the middle of the night and in some dark alley. Nobody's there. It's really like buying hardcore drugs if you want to buy alcohol, and it's bloody expensive. A bottle of Absolut vodka would cost you like 200 quid for a bottle of vodka.
200 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've got one sat on my shelf that cost me a tenner.
Exactly. I mean, if you want to buy the cheap stuff, you can, but then if you buy the imported stuff like Absolut or Gordon's or anything or Semenov, these brands are really expensive. They start from 200 and above. The cheapest is £150. But then if you buy the local ones or the cheap ones, a bottle of whiskey or whatever, it's like 40, £50, £60, something like that. And then you can go to the very, very bottom of the scale, which is the local brew, where people brew their alcohol, which is like 70% or whatever. It's like pure alcohol. You cannot drink it. So you have to mix it with a lot of mixers, and that you buy it for like £30 or something. And £30 is like a 1 liter bottle. 750 mils, like a big bottle of water. For like 30 pound, but that's like pure alcohol. It's absolutely vile. And then you get arrange this, and you get like speakers and lights and DJs and music, and you invite people, and then you have your party. Now, the risk is, as I mentioned before, some people would be under surveillance, and when they are under surveillance, they don't say anything to their friends to get themselves out of it. So what they tend to do when there is a big party, they tell their friends, "Oh, I'm not going, I'm having a party at my house if you want to come around. So let's ditch that party. We'll get their friends in their house." And then he would say to the other group, "Yeah, I'm coming." And then he will go, let the police know, knock on the door, goes in, the police comes in, bust the whole party, and he walks away from it. He would have saved himself and his friends and got all these people captured for the sake of his life. So that's why when we do the parties in Saudi, we really have to be careful who do we invite, and that's why we operate as groups. And if someone only coming by themselves, we'd say, "Where is your group? Why they are not coming?"
Yeah.
And
And
it does give you a red flag if someone says, "Oh, they're not coming. So are you telling me 10 people are not coming and you are the only one who can make it this weekend to our party? Sorry, you're not invited."
Yeah. I mean, my head's absolutely boggled with all this. I mean, alcohol. I'm just thinking, what the hell?
And the other hand, though, and that's what annoys me in about Saudi. Once you make your way towards the inner circle of the gay scene, and I mean by the inner circle, or actually the people who can get the alcohol from outside, that's how the dealers get their alcohol and their drugs, because it's all politics and business at the end of the day. And I don't want to generalize, but we all know that people in the black market and the drug dealers, they cannot bring them their stuff by themselves. There is a leak in the government somewhere. If you get to the inner circle of the gay community, which is the royals, once you know a royal who is gay or hosting gay parties, you have the job. That's it. You would go there. All alcohol are imported for free. Mm-hmm. weed, cocaine, MDMA, ecstasy, the lot, you pick and choose. Girls available, boys available, trans people, drag queens, because the perimeter is secure, the government, the police cannot enter that household. Everything comes in there. And I have been into these parties and it's absolute belter.
I know, I'm very jealous listening to this. Like this part, I'm thinking, I want to be invited there.
Exactly, like, because it's very extra safe, all the things comes out. So I remember I went to this party, and because the royals are big family, so there's like a first degree lawyer, second, third, fourth, and usually they are like the bottom of the pedigree. They're not like the higher ups. It's kind of those people who have connection with the common people. They host these parties, not the higher ups. So, and I'm thinking, if that's the level of these parties from the lowest grade royals, can you imagine what it'd be like if you are in the, if you hit tier one in the top, what would be like? So I did hear about people saying, oh, well, there was a party in a private jet. So some prince got his friends and gay friends, and they went in a private jet, flew over somewhere. They were like in the sky, just went all the way to London and came back. We were partying in a private jet and came back. And I was like, what? How?
Where was my invite?
Exactly. So yeah, you get these absolute crazy stories about parties and things like that happening, and equivalently, you have the extreme horrendous bad things that happens. So
yeah,
all you've got to do is
a rollercoaster of emotions, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Like one day out in like for, sorry, go on.
No, it's just relapsing a little bit, just carry on, sorry.
No, like for example, can you imagine if you were in this royal party underground, you have alcohol, weed, drugs, whatever, straight people, gay people, trans people, everything, and then on your way out you get stopped in a checkpoint, and the police just find something on you, and then you end up in a cell, and then the next day you will be executed because obviously you had alcohol in your blood, drugs, and probably there'd been an informant who told them that party is homosexual party, and then you would just lose everything on your way out.
I know, that's crazy. You say execution, what type of executions is it in Saudi Arabia?
Well, it's beheading.
Beheading, really?
Yeah, oh, with a sword. God.
Jesus. Oh.
Yeah. I mean, that is the law, but there are people saying, because in the religion, it mm-hmm. says for homosexual men to be pushed from a mountain or top of a hill.
Yeah.
So I haven't seen that being practiced, but we've heard and we've seen some beheading happening. So it's either you're going to be pushed from the top of a building or you're going to lose your head. Both are leading to death, and they are both horrendous. So it could be either or. I really don't know. And I'm glad that I don't know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I just wanted to ask you one more thing. So if there's someone in Saudi Arabia that's wanting to come out in their sexuality, mm-hmm. what would, you know how you said that you've got to get in with these places to like get to the parties, and those mm-hmm. parties are kind of support groups in a way, aren't they? You're connecting with people just like yourself. And mm-hmm. what would you say to someone who's just terrified of coming out and what should they look for, or like how do they look for support, or would you tell them to look at the option of fleeing, and what advice would you give?
It's really difficult because it's really individual situations, because you get some people who have very educated and liberal parents. For example, one of my friends, we used to go to his house every weekend, alcohol provided by his dad, because his dad was a diplomat, so he had access to alcohol, and his dad would come and sit with us in around the swimming pool, have a drink and meet us, and he knows that his son is gay. But all of that because his father is a diplomat. Obviously, he was educated in America, and then he worked as an ambassador somewhere in Europe, whatever. So the father is completely open-minded, and he just I think he knew about his son when they were living in Europe at some point, and then when they got back to Saudi, he said to his son, "Look, I don't want anything bad happen to you, so I'm free with everything. Just at least I know that you are safe." So we used to go to his house. His father was absolute treat. He was absolutely amazing. He would sit with us, play cards, have a glass of whiskey or vodka with us, have a laugh. And then he would say, "Okay, just take it easy, guys. I'm going to go to bed. Don't leave when you are drunk. Sleep here. I don't want the cops to hold you." He was absolutely amazing. If you got a father or a mother like that, yes, go for it. But that is a rare case scenario. The general atmosphere in Saudi is hate and prejudice against the LGBT community. So I would say keep it to yourself and don't trust anybody easily. You can trust people, but not from the beginning. You need to know people more. The only access for the support groups are through the apps. But again, you need to be careful. Talk to people on the app. That's fine if you want to talk to them. You can talk to people outside of the country. So you can, like, you know, search for people in England, in Spain, in France, whatever. And you can have that kind of tele-support from overseas and like on the apps. But if you want support in the country, talk to people, that's fine. If you want to meet them, don't meet random people. And I mean by random that people are ghosts in the social media. You don't have any pictures of them. You don't know how they look like. One of the best ways that I would recommend is start talking to people on the gay apps. And then once you build a relationship there or a rapport, then move it to Facebook, because Facebook is public, is allowed in Saudi. If you see them, if they add you on Facebook, and then you can see their friends, you can see part of their life, and then you can pick it up from there, build a relationship or a friendship, meet them in public places. It sounds frustrating and time consuming, but this is your life at risk, what we're talking about. Give it time, and with time, once you know the person that you are talking to, you meet them in public, in cafes or restaurants or shopping malls or whatever, and then you build that relationship and that trust. Sometimes even if they were under surveillance and then they find this genuine connection with you, they would not turn you in. They wouldn't invite you to a setup because they have established that connection with you. But if you meet someone from the dating apps, "Hi, I'm such and such. Do you want to meet?" "Yes, why not? Let's go for it." Boom, you go to their place, you get busted. It's not worth it. Give it time and be patient. That's the way to survive in Saudi, being a part of the LGBT community. And just don't trust people from the apps immediately. You need to build that relationship and take it very slowly. And if they don't play along with you and get on with it with you as well, that means they are not interested in knowing you or being your friend. They're just there for a target, either sexual target, like non-string attached, which is fine. I have nothing against it, but you are in a setup that is not very safe. You could go to someone on a whim of having a one-night stand, and then that ends up to be a trap, and you get ambushed by the religious police. So it's not worth it. Be patient, take it slow, until you meet that person in normal settings through a normal app like Facebook or Snapchat or Instagram. Don't have only that connection with that person, only the dating app. And I used to do that when I meet someone through gay apps and I want to meet them. I don't meet them immediately. I have to move to Facebook or WhatsApp or Instagram or Snapchat. And then when I go to meet them, I would delete the gay dating apps from my phone, because sometimes the police will just stop you and they start searching through your phone for no reason. They have the right to. So really? When you go out, make sure that your phone is clean. No gay porn, no gay websites, no gay apps, nothing. Even straight porn or girls' pictures, just be careful. Especially if that person is under surveillance and try to play along with you. And then the police would say, do you know what? We'll just bust him during the coffee meeting and just go through his phone. If there is an incriminating evidence of him being homosexual, that's enough. So that's how you do it. Just be careful and be patient, and don't expose yourself to or out yourself to anybody that you meet on the apps.
I think that's really good advice. Definitely about when you were saying about the red flags as well.
Honestly, this
interview has been such an emotional release for me. I've never been sad and laughing at the same time when you've been going on about the parties. I think it's great. I think it's great that you had that support there. And like you said, that you, even though it was wrong and it is forbidden there, I think it's good that you got a positive there still as well. It's not just all bad.
No, it's not all bad. Yeah, I did. Yeah, I was lucky.
Yeah, I think that was great. Thank you for that. I really appreciate it.
That's all right.
That was a wicked interview.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today, BA. It's been great to have you.
Thank you very much. It's good to be hosted by you guys. Thank you very much.
If you would like to get involved with the work of Report Out, please visit our main website at www.reportout.org, where you can subscribe to our regular email distribution list, which allows you to get exclusive access to our latest and exciting news, blogs, and projects. You can even donate to us to ensure that our work continues. We're also on all social media platforms, so please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn for regular updates on SOGSC human rights across the globe. Lastly, Report Out would like to give a huge thanks to all of our podcast interviewees and listeners for their valuable time and support. Your voices are no longer hidden, and when voices come together, they make us stronger as a movement.